And this week's episode of Studio Inter will be analyzing the loss against Borussia Dortmund. We'll be analyzing the win against Hellas Verona. This week's Moggi, Moratti and Frog, and much, much more. Everything here on Studio Inter, only on sempreinter.com.
Recupera Brozovic, andiamo in contropiede, la porta è vuota, tira, attenzione, è gol!
Benvenuti, bentornati to another edition of Studio Inter. I'm your host Nima Tavalli Ruzzari, wishing you back from what can only be described as a very eventful week. It's been pazza Inter. Inter doesn't do things half-assed. When they do it right. When they win, and when they lose, they lose. And here to join me to discuss all of this, I'm joined by our good friend from the producer for TSN in Canada, Mr. Michael Gallo.
Thank you for having me. And as this stands right now, we are having our first big snowstorm of the year in Toronto. So I'm tucked in nice and cozy and ready to do another great Studio Inter podcast with you guys.
You guys have like snow for like 6 months of the year or something, don't you?
Oh yeah, it'll be here until March, so it's gonna be white everywhere.
Oh my god, yeah. Well, I mean, it's nice. I mean, when it gets dark, at least the snow makes it lighter, I guess.
Exactly. Good point. Very good point.
You know, every cloud. I live in Sweden, so I've perfected these techniques to lie to myself. living in a frozen hellhole for 9 months, right? And we are also joined by a good friend of the show, who's been on as an expert, just doing small segments, but he's gonna be on for the whole hour. He's a resident gobbo from now on. Mr. Carlo Garganese, welcome.
yeah, thanks for having me. And I guess you should know the gobby, shouldn't you? Seeing as Inter are full of them now, eh?
Ah, nice one. Well, that's actually kind of, we were inspired by Inter, you know, with Marotta and Conte. So we thought we'd bring our own Marotta or Conte. And that depends on what you say. Either if you say same things, you're Marotta. If you go absolutely batshit, you're Conte. So it's up to you how you want to be.
Probably a bit of both of them.
Probably. Let's get to it. Inter played probably the best 45 minutes I've seen them play. For maybe a decade even, in the first half against Borussia Dortmund. 2-0, maybe should have even scored the third and ended it there. But then in the second half, it was as if it was a completely different game. Borussia came out and Inter were just unable to cope with them. And it felt like it was only a matter of time before Borussia scored their third goal. I don't know what to make of this, to be honest with you. To me, this is absolutely... is this pazza Inter? Is this Conte's football not working? I'm really keen to hear your thoughts on this, Carlo.
Yeah, I think it's both of those two things. I mean, Inter, like you said, they were so good in the first half. In the second half, they just looked exhausted. They had no energy. And I think it's a problem that Conte's had throughout his career, not really knowing how to crack Europe. And there's a number of reasons for that. The first is the formation, the 3-5-2, which obviously didn't have too much of a problem in the first half. But the 3-5-2 doesn't succeed in the Champions League, and that's been proven time and time again. And secondly, that the intensity that Conte demands of his teams. We've seen in the past that when his teams have only had one competition to focus on, so I'm thinking of Juventus in his first season and Chelsea in his first season, they were in both of those two seasons that those two clubs weren't in the Champions League or in Europe at all. So the teams were able to play 100 miles an hour once a week and the opposition couldn't cope with it. The problem is that once Conte's had to challenge in on two fronts, he hasn't been able to quite master doing that on two fronts. And I think with Inter in that second half, the players just had nothing left. You know, everything had gone. And that's something that Conte needs to address, really, because he He runs his players into the ground in training. We know that in starting from pre-season. And, you know, it's something that we've seen a bit with Inter this season, where the second half of games, especially in the Champions League, they've kind of fallen off. So I think it was more that the Inter players were exhausted, but also I think I would also put it a little bit down to Conte's tactics, which is another issue he's had in Europe. He's very rigid. He has one way of playing. The 3-5-2 doesn't help. He's a bit reactive with his substitutions. We've seen that in the past at Juve as well. And I thought he was a little bit reactive in the second half. When the game started to go against Inter, he took quite a long time before he made any changes, either in terms of tactics or in terms of personnel. So I think you add all those things together, and that's kind of the reason why it happened.
Mike, what are your thoughts?
Well, it felt like such a carbon copy of the Barcelona game to me. It was almost identical in terms of how Inter played in that first half. They were so dominant, and then it was a complete 180. And like Carlos said, it's just how tired these players were. They just had nothing left. I say the first 5 minutes of the second half, they had some legs because they were able to rest for 15 minutes during the halftime break. And then after those 5 minutes were up, it's just like they had no legs. They were always chasing the ball. And I actually went back and watched the Barcelona game after the Dortmund game. And it's just like I seen the exact same game happen. And the exact same, I know there were different score lines. One was 1-0, one was 2-0. But they ended up with this, you know, 3-2 and a 2-1 loss. And it's just like Carlos said, these players were so tired. And they were chasing. And I was just, you know, watching that second half unfold against Dortmund. It's like this, I knew what was going to happen in this game based on how they were always following the ball. They didn't really have any chances in the second half. In either half against Barcelona and Dortmund. So for me, it was just like watching, it's like deja vu all over again. And whether it's because they're being worked so hard in training and that's why they're so tired, I don't know. And it's like we were waiting for Conte to make that substitution, and maybe it came too late. Maybe, you know, that's possible, but go figure. As soon as, you know, the first one came, the next couple substitutions, you know, were very, very quick as well. And then, of course, Politano comes in, and within, 15 seconds, he was injured. And it basically, I'm not saying they would have came back, because I don't think they would have, but it was basically like playing with 10 men the last 15, I believe it was last 15 to 20 minutes, with Politano basically walking around hobbled. And I give him a lot of credit for staying on and just being a body on the field, because he was walking around at his highest speed. And it's disappointing, because this Champions League campaign had a lot of promise. And even though it's not over yet, it's looking bleak. You really got to hope for Barcelona to get a result against Dortmund. But more importantly, having to go to Prague now and hoping for a result there. And we know how hard they played Inter on match day one. And it's not going to be an easy match. That's going to be much more difficult than everyone thinks. And I just hope they can, after match day five, they're in position to make it through.
We'll get to the chances of that in a bit. I just want to focus a little bit on what you both kind of touched on, but especially what Carlos said. I mean, the fact that the tactics doesn't work in the 3-5-2, that may be. I mean, that's for sure. It doesn't work in the Champions League for what reason? I don't know. I honestly don't know if that's just a temporary thing or if it's a permanent. Like if it's really is like that or from a longer perspective. But for me, I think what struck me for a long time now with Conte is he gets it right from the start. He's very good at preparing for games before they begin. But if something in the game changes, he seems a little bit like dumbfounded and he doesn't know, he reacts late. But above all, I find it strange that he seems unable to change the dynamics of a game when a coach responds back. That to me is a little bit worrisome. Now, I haven't followed his career as closely when he was at Chelsea and Juventus. So I wanted to ask you, Carlo, has it always been like this, or is this just maybe like, or has he developed it? Was he better at Chelsea than he was at Juve in terms of reacting to tactical changes during a game?
In game changes, yeah, I would say that is one of his weaknesses. I mean, in terms of the formation, I mean, he hasn't only used a 3-5-2 throughout his career. I mean, before he came to Juve, I mean, his plan when he came to Juve was to use a 4-2-4. And he actually started the season with a 4-2-4, quickly realised it didn't work, and then changed to a 3-5-2. So he did show some flexibility there. But in terms of actually in games, he is, you're absolutely spot on. He's a very rigid and stubborn coach. And he has one way of playing, and that's it, really. And I think that is, again, that is one of the reasons why he has struggled in Europe, you know, over the course of his career. Because I think in Europe, more than in a domestic league, where it's kind of more of a survival of the fittest over 38 games, in Europe, you have to be able to, you know, chop and change and tweak little things. It's all about the fine little details. And you know, you have to be able to react during games, and that's one thing that, you know, if we're going back to Juve, obviously Conte didn't even get out of the group in his last season at Juve, and then the very next season Allegri came in and took Juventus straight to the final. And Allegri is a coach who often would change things, you know, tactically. He would change formations within games. He had a very hybrid formation where, you know, he might start the game with a 4-3-3, and it would, you know, or 4-2-3-1, but it would change into a 4-4-2 depending on whether the team's attacking or defending, or what part of the pitch it's in, and then it could move into a 3-man defence. And you know, it was a very fluid system, and I think a lot of the top coaches in European football have these kind of systems. You know, Guardiola's very much. I mean, Guardiola doesn't even have a formation in terms of where the players actually are on the pitch. It totally depends on whether, you know, how high up they are, you know, territorially where they are, as to where the players are actually placed on the pitch. You know, I would say the same with Klopp as well, if we're taking those two examples. And for me, those are the two best teams in Europe right now, Liverpool and Man City. Whereas Conte, you know, I think if you had a bird's eye view of Inter when they're playing, you could probably always see the 3-5. Generally, you would probably be able to see the 3 men, then the 5, then the 2. You know, it's you know where everyone is on the pitch. And I think that, he's a bit too rigid with that. And coming back to your point about, you know, not changing things up, I think he's always been very reactive. I remember when Juventus lost to, I mean, they got completely destroyed by Bayern Munich. I mean, it was a great Bayern Munich team. It was the season that Bayern went on to win the Champions League. So I think that was 2012-13. And if I'm not mistaken, he took until, I mean, they were getting completely, Juventus were getting completely played off the park. And he took until like the 65th minute or something before he made a change. You know, it's things like that where he has always been like that, really. Yeah. So, yeah, it's definitely a weakness of his. Definitely.
Mike, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I would totally agree. It's almost like when Carlo brought up, it's like you'd have a bird's eye view. It's almost like to a point where Conte would almost be better to be having that bird's eye view and maybe identifying things a little bit easier from looking from above, seeing like because when you're on, I think when you're on pitch level, maybe you can't have that, you know, as good as a view of what's going on across the entire pitch from, say, maybe someone a little bit higher. But just like it just maybe you see some coaches in other sports, they have some of their assistants that are actually working above the level. I'm not saying that's what Conte should do, but just
admit. So we should buy a drone. That's what you're saying. We need a drone to hover and watch down and broadcast directly down to Conte so he sees. No, I think it makes sense. No, it does. And he is, I mean, like you said, if this was an easy thing to do, what Klopp and Guardiola do, then, you know, everyone would do it, but it's not, and that's why they're the best in the world. But probably this is why he'll really struggle in European football, at least in terms of European cups. That's a good point. We'll see how that goes. But one thing that I definitely think is a classical Conte is the childish reaction after the game, where he went out in three different interviews and said so many weird stuff, so much weird stuff that I don't really know how to interpret or how to take it, other than he was just angry and he was being a petulant child, which I guess is not the first time he's done it. I mean, we've got his infamous 10 euro, 100 euro restaurant comment at Juventus when Juventus didn't buy him Juan Iturbe. because that's the difference between winning the Champions League and not. It's Juan Iturbe. I'm really keen to pick both your brains on this. I mean, what kind of? I mean, for me, the reason why that really annoyed me is the fact that he got. I mean, if we look at the squad, Inter just came out of the out of the settlement agreement with UEFA because of the breaches to the financial fair play rules, and Inter broke the club transfer record twice this past summer. They got rid of all the players he didn't want. Okay, maybe he didn't get every single player. He didn't get Dzeko, but he got Alexis Sanchez, and he didn't get Vidal because Vidal wanted to stay. So, other than that, I don't see how he can come out and start saying the things he did that may, you know, you should talk, you know, the management should come out here and talk. I'm always saying the same things. We need, you know, except for Diego Godin, no one in this team has won anything. I wanted to, you know, we buy, who am I supposed to turn to? We buy players from Sassuolo and Cagliari. Now, it just so happens that the players he bought from Sassuolo and Cagliari are two of the best players that have performed the best for him this season. Like, I don't understand what he's trying to get at. And I mean, I guess my question is to both of you, do you think that there is a plan behind this, or is he just being a petulant man-child? Carlo?
Yeah, I think he's been what Conte's always been, a petulant man-child. I mean, he has no reason to complain with the transfer market at all. Let's be frank. I mean, Inter spent over 150 million euros on new players. I think this is off the top of my head, you know, so I'm sure it can be Googled, but I'm pretty sure Inter were in the top five in Europe for money spent on new players this summer. I'm trying to think back to a few months now, but I'm pretty sure they were in the top five. And I can say 100% that there wasn't a major team, a big team in Europe that improved more in terms of personnel than Inter have this summer. And, you know, like you said, the transfer records that they broke. And also, don't forget, they spent, you know, a fortune on Conte himself, giving him a huge contract as well. So, you know, Inter have spent the money. They've done everything possible to create, you know, a team that can take Inter back to where they should be. I think Conte just needs to be a little bit realistic. I mean, excuse me. He needs to be a bit realistic. I mean, Rome wasn't built in a day. And, you know, you can't jump from Z to A overnight. And Inter have improved so, so much. You know, the fact that they've had such a great start to the Serie A season is proof of that as well as Conte's great work. And yeah, he just needs to be realistic, really. I think I disagree with him over the lack of depth. Well, I disagree over the fact that there's a lack of numbers, because I think Inter have the numbers. I think if you go through each department of the field, you know, they've got six centre-backs for three positions. I think a right wing-back, they've got Candreva and Lazaro and D'Ambrosio, who can play that role. A left wing-back, they've got Asamoah and Biraghi. You know, in central midfield, they've obviously got Sensi, Brozzo and Barella as the first choice. But behind them, they've got Vecino, they've got Gagliardini, They've got Asamoah that can play there, and Borja Valero. I'm talking about just numbers here. And then in attack, there's four senior players for two roles. And then obviously you've got the youngster Esposito as well. So in terms of numbers, the numbers are there. It's not like he doesn't have players that he can play. I think where I would say is that there is probably a lack of quality in terms of the depth, especially, you know, when you compare Inter to Juventus. I mean, you know, look at Juve. I mean, they brought Dybala off the bench against Milan on Sunday, you know, and he scored the winner. So, you know, Inter don't have that kind of depth that they can bring off the bench to change games or to rotate, but they have got the numbers. So I think Conte just needs to be a bit realistic. Inter's, you know, Marotta, they've done an incredible job, unbelievable job. And he just needs to have a little bit more patience, I think, in that regard.
Agree. Michael, what are your thoughts on all this mess? I mean, what was going through your mind as he was shooting off one salvo after the other to the Italian press after the game against Dortmund?
Well, I'm disappointed to hear it, because this is the deepest, you know, team that Inter's had in, what, 8-9 years. And when I say deep, it's like you look in the bench, you've got players that can play in the roles as starters. And as Carlos said, it's maybe the quality isn't as high as you'd hope it to be, but they do have the players and they can play in these roles. So the players are there, and, you know, they spent so much money, and yet he is almost saying that they should have spent more, when it doesn't add up for me. And
well, that's the thing. It doesn't add up. It makes no sense. I mean, he was the one who decided that Vecino and Gagliardini, especially Gagliardini, was basically, he said it was his pet project to fix Gagliardini. So what is he talking about? I mean, there's no coherence here. That's what gets me. And this nonsense about Barella and Sensi being from Cagliari and Sassuolo. What? Like, they've been your best players, dude. I mean, maybe in the short term, that gives like a little jolt in the legs, like a shot of adrenaline. But in the long run, we've seen him do this before. And he just becomes a liability for everyone involved. And given that at Inter, as I said, Inter is like an Inter year is like dog years. It's like 14 years in one normal human year. I mean, it's like we're seeing like everything happen at warp speed now. So, you know, this is one of my concerns before hiring him, was this volatility. Inter are a volatile club. This guy is a volatile person and has a volatile personality. I mean, we don't even know how the Chinese react to this, how Suning react to being criticized like this after the game.
I'm gonna say what Carlos said, something that really I think triggers this whole thing, and it's that you look at Juventus and bring on Dybala off the bench. Like he's, I think what he's in his mind, he's comparing what Inter has compared to what Juventus has. Mm. And Inter can't bring Dybala off the bench. They don't have that player. I mean, you know, Sanchez is injured right now. I mean, it's not, I wouldn't put him on that same pedestal, but he's comparing what Inter have to what Juve has. And that's why he's disappointed, because he wants to be on that level right now. And I don't think I'm pretty sure that he knows that they're just maybe a step behind, and he wants to be at the same level in terms of their talent, what they have depth-wise. And he's disappointed, and he's making it known.
And you're right about that. But then the players he wants to bring in are Olivier Giroud. <Yeah. laughs> You see what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, I really like Edin Dzeko. I think he's a great player, but I don't see Edin Dzeko, Olivier Giroud, I don't see them as this at the same level as bringing Dybala and Douglas Costa off the bench. I really don't. You know, that's what gets me. This incoherent ranting, and that he then goes out, the press conference a few days after than that was just, it was the most Trumpian thing I've seen in football. He just didn't even pretend. When he was asked about his comments, that you all interpreted it as me complaining. I wasn't complaining. What? It's like, what? you can't even make this stuff up. And that's the kind of stuff, I mean, that really gets under my skin. And I mean, for, at the end of the day, as long as the players are behind him, there's nothing anyone can say. And it seems that they are fully behind him. But my worry is that once, I think that the speed at which this can deteriorate when they grow tired of listening to him rant and rave, and this falling apart, like the time that can happen, and this being Inter as well, that will worries me. It can all go downhill really fast.
Yeah, he has to be careful because, you know, what he said about Sensi, about Barella, you know, it's risky. I think he's fortunate in the sense that this Inter dressing room, I'm not sure there's really the player power there that there was maybe last season when you had the likes of Nainggolan and Perisic and Icardi, obviously, you know, kind of Wanda, troublemakers.
Wanda was the boss then.
Oh, sorry, yeah, Wanda, yeah.
Sporting director Wanda Nara.
Yeah, you know, so those three players probably would have kicked off at what Conte said. But I think he does have, I mean, Bergami said it himself, didn't he? That, you know, that the players are still with Conte and their reputations are not, I mean, obviously you've got the likes of Lukaku and Godin, who obviously are real huge names. But I mean, as Conte said himself, not the rest of them, they haven't won, you know, major trophies. So, you know, what we saw, say, at Chelsea, where he lost the dressing room, partly due to his own fault, where, you know, he was
texting Diego Costa. the texting Diego Costa that is no longer part of the team.
Exactly.
That to me is just a masterpiece.
Exactly. Sorry. I mean, Chelsea, I mean, it's funny enough, despite Conte being like this throughout his career, you know, at Juventus, he didn't really have any problems. And obviously in Italy, the whole team, the whole country, he got everyone so behind him. And we saw that camaraderie, you know, everyone celebrating together. You know, the famous when Italy beat Spain 2-0 in the second round. And, you know, he was jumping and going mad on the touchline and all the players were running over to him. And then they all ran onto the pitch together. You know, there was a real togetherness there. So we saw that there, that he had the dressing room. And, you know, so it's only really at Chelsea where he has had those problems. But, you know, if you look at Chelsea during the Abramovich era, pretty much every single manager has lost the dressing room, you know, including Mourinho, yeah, twice. So, you know, so I wouldn't put the blame on Conte even too much there, even if he did make big mistakes. So, yeah, I wouldn't worry too much about it now. But he definitely does have to be careful, especially if like results start to go against him as well.
That's true. Well, that's a good point. Well, let's leave that to it because a little while. I mean, let's talk a little bit about Inter's chances, like you spoke about before, Michael. Going on, I mean, the one good thing here for Inter in the Champions League going forward is that if Inter, and given the fact that Inter scored two goals against Borussia Dortmund away, and they didn't concede any goals at home, if Inter and Dortmund were to end up on the same points, Inter would be above them. The same situation as to why Inter were knocked out last year with Spurs. They were on the same points, but because and they had a win each, but because Spurs scored at the San Siro, Inter Spurs qualified to the second round. But that means that, in my book, that means that Inter have to beat... they have to beat Sparta Slavia Prague, and they have to draw at least Barcelona, because I think that Dortmund will beat Slavia Prague. I mean, sure, it can happen, miracles can happen, but is it realistic, Michael?
Yeah, I think it's realistic. I mean, look, the chances are not on their side right now, that's for sure. I mean, going into the Dortmund game, I think their expectations would have been, as an Inter supporter, it would have been, if you can get a draw out of that match, then you're looking pretty good. But obviously coming out with no points, and you're down by 3 points now, I think that tiebreaker may come into play, because if everything kind of goes to what you would expect it to happen, say Inter would go to Prague and get a win, and then, say, Barcelona beats Dortmund, and then Barcelona has nothing to play for on match day 6, you would say, okay, maybe Inter's chances are pretty good to get a match day six, to get a win at home against Barcelona. Kind of situation just like last year with Tottenham, with Barcelona as well. But, you know, obviously that didn't go to plan because Inter weren't able to get the win against PSV. But I think their chances are better than what people think right now. It's just, it's, if Barcelona have nothing to play, now, of course, I think if it goes down to match day six, it's not like Messi's not going to play. I remember against Tottenham last year, Messi, I believe he played, I think it was about 30 minutes. He came out as a substitute in that game. So they played about, I think maybe 50-60% of their regular lineup in that game. And Barcelona has the depth where even 50% of your lineup is still going to be really good. But going how Inter played in that first half against Barcelona, I'd be pretty optimistic in getting a result at home against them. So I think their chances are a little bit south of 50%, but still very realistic. And I don't think it's time to give up hope yet. And I'm anxiously awaiting match day five. That's for sure.
That's for sure. I was looking at that. I thought it was the other way around. You're absolutely right. I was wrong. I thought it was the other way around, that Inter first played Barcelona and then Slavia Prague. No, yeah. The match day five will pretty much be decisive, because if Borussia get a point, then that's it. But if they don't, it's all in Inter's hands again, isn't it?
It's all in Inter's hands anyway. If Inter win both their games, they're through.
They're through.
They're through regardless.
That's true.
You're absolutely right. Because then, I guess so.
At the very worst, they would be tied with Dortmund, and they would have a tiebreaker. So, like, that's.
Well, you guys are assuming that Barcelona beats Borussia Dortmund. I mean, that is the key. I mean,
No, because if Dortmund were to get a point off of Barcelona, and then Inter would beat Barcelona, then I believe then Barcelona would be out. Am I correct?
Yeah, they would correct. Be. Yeah. They would have. Yeah, you're right. They would get 9 points, and Inter would have 10. And yeah. I would laugh my ass off and be obnoxious on Twitter, which is Sorry. go, Carlo.
Yeah, no, you. Yeah, it is in Inter's hands. I mean, obviously, that the best scenario for Inter is they beat Slavia Prague, and then Barcelona beat Dortmund, and then Barca have nothing to play for in the last game. So that is the dream scenario. And then you'd expect, well, you'd hope that Inter would then beat, a much weakened Barca team.
Yeah,
Messi will play whatever happens.
He'll play.
That's guaranteed. Messi, you know, as some call him, the little dictator, when it comes to Champions League, he has to play, because he has to get those goals. He wants to score more goals in the Champions League. He wants to finish top scorer in the competition. Yeah. He'll play. That's one thing for sure.
You're absolutely right, because now that I look at it, if Barcelona win against Dortmund, they've also won the group. So yes. that then they literally have nothing to play for when they play Inter. So I think you're absolutely right. That it is in Inter's hands. It is all about
Sports
Inter.
Forza Barcelona. That's all we can say right now, right?
I need a shower. I need a shower now. Yeah, not a fan of the Catalans. Not a fan of the Catalans. Right. No, but absolutely. I mean, it would be best for Inter. I mean, in my world, the ideal solution would be that Inter beat Barcelona and Dortmund beat Barcelona, and Inter and Dortmund go through and Barcelona play in the Europa League. I would absolutely love that. I want to see Messi in against Ludo Goretz and stuff like that. I think that would be hilarious. But let's not dwell on my hatred.
You know what's going to happen, don't you? You know what's going to happen.
Yes,
Slavia Prague are going to come second. That's what's going to happen.
Barca and Slavia. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Right. Well, yeah, I mean, that's a good shot. I didn't think of that. You're both right. Inter have it in their own hands. Right, let's talk a little bit about the Hellas Verona game, which I thought was weird. I mean, to me, Inter played, the number of chances Inter created and the number, Hellas had nothing. But I want to talk to you a little about, because you and me, Michael, have been texting a little bit about this penalty issue. To me, I think it's a penalty. I'm not saying that the player didn't make the situation worse than it looked like, but there is contact with Handanovic sliding into him, and to me, that's a penalty. I want to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, so I mean, I went and looked at it probably about 100 times this morning, yesterday. I think because the referee made the call on the field as a penalty, I think that VAR was not going to overturn that. And I think they are right for not overturning that penalty call. Had that been the situation where it was not called a penalty, I don't think VAR would have overturned it to a penalty. I don't think there was enough conclusive video for me to make a 100% decision to say it was or was not. Because obviously Handanovic comes in very clumsy. It looks like he kind of trips into him.
Yeah.
But on the angles they were showing on the video, I think there was three different angles. It's just like, it's hard to tell what part of the body is being contacted, and if there's even the contact there as well. 100%. It looks to me, I mean, the attacker starts to fall as Handanovic is about to collide with him, and it looks like Handanovic tries to let up, and as he's falling, there may have been some type of contact. If that's the case, for sure, I agree with you, then they had the right call. It's very hard to tell what part of the body is being touched, whether it's his foot or his knee. And
I mean, the video I'm referring to is like when the contact is with his foot and the back of his foot, like when the ball is like when he's sliding in, that's when the contact is. And I'm saying, yes, the striker, whose name eludes me, he definitely made a meal of it, but there is contact. And you know, it's not like he didn't swan dive before the contact was made. He felt the contact and he fell.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, it didn't look like Handanovic was very upset with the decision. So that to me would mean that, yeah, there was some type of contact that led to him, you know, going to ground. And that's why I'm not making like a big deal of it. I don't think it's, you know, had Inter lost 1-0, or maybe the game was 1-1, I still wouldn't have you know, complained about the decision, because I don't think it was 100% not or 100% for. It's one of those things where it was the referee saw it, he had the good vision of it, he was right there, he made a decision, and he was sticking with it. VAR did not see nothing to overturn it. It is what it is, and I'm not. It's for me, it was one of those where whatever the call in the field was, you stand with the referee and you go with it. And, that's what it was.
Okay, cool. Let's talk about the game itself. And I mean, I felt like this was a game where Inter were so frustrating, and they were frustrated on the pitch. And, I'm a big fan of Lukaku, but I just want to say that when Manchester United fans were frustrated with him last season, I can kind of understand their frustration, because when the ball goes between his legs and he nutmegs himself when he's like missing from open goal, when he heads the ball into the arms of the goalkeeper, I mean, it just, you don't expect to see that of a player at that level, especially when you know that he can be really good and be top level striker. I don't know, Carlo, you watched it much more in Manchester United. You understand what I mean? Like it becomes a little bit like, what are you doing?
Yeah, well, I think we know technically he's not the best player in the world. His touch, his first touch especially, it's not top level. We know that the qualities that he has, you know, physically, you know, his pace and his power and that and he's a good finisher. In general, a very, very good finisher, and he's got a brilliant left foot on him. His goal record is good. I mean, how many goals has he got for Inter? 9 goals. You know, his goal record, I mean, he's the top scorer in the history of the Belgium national team, and he's still only 26. I mean, you know, statistically, he's got a fantastic record, but he's never going to be the kind of player who's going to be the best at linking the play, being involved in a free-flowing, you know, multi-pass move. He's just not that kind of player. And he's going to give you some bloopers. You know, he's going to do those kind of things that nutmeg himself and miss an open goal from 2 yards out. He's just the kind of player he is. He can be clumsy. But, you know, Conte wanted him at all costs, and he knows he's going to get 20 plus goals from him this season, guaranteed. And you know, if he does that, then Inter going to be up there this season. So I think it's just something that you have to take with Lukaku. My issues with him more so than that are his inability really to score against the biggest teams. That's been his problem. I mean, at Manchester United, his record was abysmal against the top six. If you have I've forgotten what the stat was, but it was something like one goal in his 2 years there in the Premier League, I think, something like that. While at Manchester United, obviously a very poor Manchester United team, but still, that's a terrible record. And at Inter so far, he hasn't scored against a big team, really. I mean, I guess you could say he scored against Milan in the derby, which is a huge game, but Milan are more like a...
they're not as strong as they've once been. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, let's put it that way, yeah. Exactly. So, you know, I want to see Lukaku step it up in the games against Juventus, against Barca, against Dortmund. I want to see him score and shine in those games. He hasn't quite done that yet. He hasn't been terrible in those games, but he hasn't proved to be that 80 million euro striker. And it was the same at United, and it's been the same throughout his career. In the big games against the biggest teams, he hasn't quite done it. He's got that kind of reputation that Zlatan once had of being a flat track bully. And there's nothing wrong with that. Those kind of players will win you titles. They'll win you Serie A titles. But, you know, again, coming to the Champions League, you know, the strikers that win you the Champions Leagues and get you far in Europe are the ones that step up in the big matches. So that's what I want to see more from Lukaku going forward. I can let him off the odd nutmeg because, you know, it makes me laugh.
Yes, it does. And you love sending me text about it, winding me up. But I can live with that. I can live with that. No, but yeah, I guess you're both right. I guess you're right at that. But Mike, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, do you agree with Carlo or like you think I'm being like, I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Well, when you look at if you haven't watched much Serie A this year and you would look at the top scorers of the league, you would see Lukaku with 9 goals in second place. And you're like, okay, that's, you know, it's been a really good buy for Inter. I don't think he's played up to the level as the player as what shows on paper right now. Saying that he has 9 goals, I don't think he's played that well. I think that he's played a lot of bad games where he scored and where he's had a really bad, say, 85 minutes, but he was able to score that one chance he had, or of the one of 5, 6, or 7 chances he had in that game. So that's what I've kind of looked. I wasn't the biggest fan of bringing him in to the squad, but yes, he has scored goals. He's, you know, he's done something that I think Inter needed, that would definitely need to make the buy. It's just that it's not going as well as what you'll see on paper right now. And he's, like Carlos said, the hasn't scored in the big games. I wouldn't even classify the Milan Derby, what we had, as that big of a game as what it usually is. But yeah, I think he still has a lot to prove for Inter. And he's had some great moments for Inter so far. I think he just has a lot ahead of him. And I think he still needs to prove himself to everyone, to the team. Give us a big goal, whether it's against Barcelona, a winning goal against Prague in a couple weeks. That's what everyone's waiting for. A goal to get us out of the group, maybe, whatever it is. I just think we're still waiting on that big moment from him so far, because I believe three or four of the goals have been penalties. I believe, I'm not 100% sure how many of them have been penalties yet, but look, he's been good. Not great. I'm just expecting a little better with that price tag that we paid.
The thing is, though, what I like about him a lot, and I mean, I think he should only be fair, is the fact that he's a very loyal team player. I don't think he gets enough credit for that. He works his butt off for the team. He really runs. He does everything Conte asks him to do. He runs. He fights for the ball. He his physique, like he does everything for the team. And I think that is why Conte primarily bought him. He's a guy who wants to build a team, and he wants his dressing rooms to be where the team is the number one thing. And he was like this, Conte, as a player even. The team is the most important thing for him. And Lukaku really is that kind of a player. And I think most of those players that we have at Inter right now are those kinds of players that put the team above themselves. The Icardis and Nainggolans and Perisic are all out of there. And then I guess, you know, sure. What you both are saying, when a striker at a club like Inter, when Inter break their transfer record to sign a striker, then you expect them not to nutmeg themselves 3 meters from the goal. That's just what I'm saying here. And I guess, you know, as you said, you know, he is what he is. He's a goal scoring machine, and he'll win you league titles, whether or not he can do, like you said, with the epitaph with Zlatan. I mean, he had that rumor around him for quite some time, and then he decided to score in every big game in football available and got rid of that. We'll just have to wait and see with that. But I do think that you're right, Michael. I agree with that. I think that if you look at the stats, you think it's a huge success. I wouldn't go so far as to call it that either. I think there's been some technical, you know, I think you can say that, like you said, like against Bologna, I think is a great illustration of that. He scored twice, but he wasn't really having a great game. So we'll just have to wait and see on that. But we have to talk about Nicolò Barella's goal. I mean, I love this kid. But I've been stalking him for 2 years, watching Cagliari games, because I think he's amazing. And again, and now more and more by every game, he's showing that he's some sort of Italian Nainggolan, isn't he? I mean, box to box, good shot on him. It was the first time in a long while that I actually screamed, like when Inter scored a goal, when he scored that goal. What do you think about Barella and the goal, and also him as a player? What's your thoughts, Carlo?
Well, the amazing goal, fantastic goal. I like him. I like him a lot. I mean, you forget how young he is. I think he's 22. He's a very modern player. I mean, he never stops running. He's got that grinta. He's got that bit of Nainggolan. He's got that bit of Gattuso. But he does have technical qualities as well, as we saw with the amazing goal. So I think he's already a regular for the Italy national team, and he's part of this new generation of young and very promising Italian central midfielders. I mean, there's an abundance of great young Italian central midfielders. Inter have got a number of them with Barella, with Sensi, and then you've obviously got the likes of Verratti, you've got Jorginho. Well, he's not really Italian, but he plays for Italy. You know, you've got Zaniolo, there's Castrovilli, there's, I'm forgetting
Tonali,
some.
Tonali
as well. I mean, there's God. So many. There's one area of the field where Italy really does have an abundance of outstanding players, and it's in the centre of midfield. So Barella's part of that, and I think he's got a very bright future ahead of him. I think as he gets older, he'll become better at kind of controlling that midfield, because I think if there's one thing that Inter lack at the moment, and we've seen that against both Barca and against Dortmund away, it's that ability to really control the game, keep the ball, and that helps when you play with such intensity. It stops you from getting tired in the second half of matches if you can keep the ball, if your three central midfielders can just you know, drop the tempo a little bit, just keep it, you know, and make the opponents do the running. And I think that's where Barella probably can improve, just keeping that ball, the short game. I think he definitely has the ability to be able to do that, and that's where I think he needs to improve going forward. But yeah, he's a great player. I love him, and I think he's got a big future ahead of him.
Agreed. Well, anything to add on that, Michael? Barella.
Yeah, just quickly, I think with Insensi's absence, he's kind of elevated himself a little bit. I don't know if you guys would agree or not. I mean, obviously with the goal, the winning goal against Verona, I think that's kind of highlighted. But without Sensi, obviously someone needed to step up in that midfield because Sensi had been arguably Inter's best player for the first 2+ months of the season. And I really like what I see so far. And I've only seen him a couple times with Italy so far. I haven't seen him play as, I mean, I wasn't really looking for him that much when I watched Italy play, because he's played, what, I think 10 matches or so with Azzurri so far. But we're all excited. I mean, I think it becomes a permanent buy after this year. I know it's a loan right now from Cagliari, but it becomes a permanent buy, correct?
It's a loan with an option to buy, but given that they paid so much for the loan, it's like the Politano deal. Same with Sensi. So because of the fact that they've removed these forced options to buy, they haven't removed that. They've removed these buyback clauses. So, but the thing is that FIFA counts or UEFA counts forced options to buy as a direct sale for purposes of financial fair play. So the one way they get around it in Italy, because they're masters at bending the rules, is to basically have these gentlemen's agreements, wink, wink, where it's a straight loan, but there's an option to buy. And everyone knows that, you know, it's basically that. Yeah. And UEFA can't say anything and it drives them mad.
It's an accountancy trick. It's just an accountancy trick.
Yeah, it really is. But it's really brilliant that they use it in that way, because that's their way of fighting back against what other teams and other clubs are doing. Basically, is to say that, okay, we'll have a gentleman's agreement. Nothing on paper. It is Italy after all, so nothing on paper. And they loan the players for high fees, and then they have an option to buy. And they can't say that it's a force, you know, it's a signing, it's a loan. So, you got to do what you got to do to survive.
It's not like other teams like PSG or Man City financially dope, you know.
Yeah. No, you're right. No, but you got to, you know, it's legal, but it's not. Yeah, I know. Anyway, yeah. So Barella is same with Sensi. Barella and Sensi are definitely players that are, you know, that are Inter players, even though they're on loan, quote unquote.
Yeah, technically,
exactly. Let's move on to the part of the show where we pay tribute, rip the piss out of, and make fun of something or someone in the world of football. Starting with the positivity, which will be presented this week's Moratti, which will be presented by Mr. Carlo Garganese.
He works a lot, he's intelligent, and he surprises people sometimes with his ideas. Not easy to find one person of this qualities.
Okay, well, this week's Moratti of the Week, I'm going to go for Shakhtar Donetsk's Brazilian midfielder Tyson, because obviously we've seen in the last few weeks a number of, well, not even the last few weeks, this year in general, a worrying increase of incidences of racism. And, you know, sadly, this weekend, the latest incident was during Shakhtar's victory against Dynamo Kiev, when Tyson was, let's say, allegedly, but it seemed quite blatant to me, subjected to racist monkey noises. And he picked up the ball, he booted the ball into the crowd, a bit like Mario Balotelli did the week before. And incredibly, he was sent off by the referee, and he left the pitch in tears. So it was quite an emotional incident, but you know, well done to Tyson for standing up to the racists, and you know, it's created a big stir on social media and in the world of football in general, and you know, again, it's shone the light on this current, like I said, this worrying increase of racism now in football.
Agreed, good one, Forza Tyson. Right, let's move on to something much more comical, this week's Frog, which will be presented by Mr. Michael Gallant.
È clamoroso! Autogol di Ranocchia!
All right, this week's Frog, we go back to the Manchester City versus Atalanta game. It was the 82nd minute, I believe, and Atalanta had a breakaway. And earlier in the match, Ederson, their goalie for Manchester City, had been injured at halftime, and he was replaced by Claudio Bravo. So their backup keeper was in, and he came. There was a breakaway. He came, and he was sent off for a foul. So Manchester City were now down to no goalkeepers, no named goalkeepers, at least, on their team. So the substitution, in came Kyle Walker. Not a goalkeeper, but came on off the bench. And everyone was confused. I was confused. Pep Guardiola was confused. The referees were confused. It looked like Kyle Walker was also confused. No one knew what was going on. But there was about a 7.5 minute delay here. So what was this delay for? Well, I did some a little bit of investigating, and no one really knew why this was taking so long. At first, I believe Fernandinho thought he was coming off, and then he came off, and then he wasn't coming off. Kyle Walker was standing at the touchline for a good 5 minutes, ready to come on, waiting for gloves, got his gloves. And then Fernandinho went back on towards the field. And then they, again, the delay was kept going and going. VAR had a quick look at it. Wireless was all going on. It came to light that Kyle Walker could not wear Claudio Bravo's backup goalkeeper shirt because it had Claudio Bravo's number one on it, and technically you have to have your own number when you're coming on, and you have to be a designated goalkeeper because you can't just put someone on, say, the team who's on already on the field. They have to have a goalkeeper jersey and be a named goalkeeper, so the referee knows. So there's so much confusion. 7.5 minutes go by, and after all this, they couldn't figure out what to do with the jersey for Kyle Walker. So he comes in, and he still ends up wearing Claudio Bravo's number one shirt with Claudio Bravo on the back of his name. No tape. It just said number one. I think it was 7 minutes and 45-second minute delay while this was all going on. And at the end of the day, Atalanta had a free kick just outside the penalty area, and they had an easy shot. Kyle Walker spilled it, but was still able to save it. And they never had another chance the rest of the game, despite being a man up. So that was a hilarious little. I mean, I think there were so many factors that were at play here, whether it be Kyle Walker, Guardiola. Guardiola looks like he was probably trying to waste as much time as possible. Even the fourth official didn't handle the situation well. I mean, there needs to be. I think this is a situation that FIFA and UEFA needs to look at in terms of having to bring on a non-goalkeeper to play in a goalkeeper's role, so that they have an actual number for that player, not having to wear someone else's number. Because say Kyle Walker gets sent off and he's wearing number one, we got another huge problem here. And is it Claudio Bravo who's getting sent off again, or is it Kyle Walker who's being sent off because he's not wearing that jersey? So a whole just a whole mess going on in at the San Siro, because obviously Atalanta are playing their games there. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. The delay didn't help, but it was comical for me.
It was very funny. It was very funny. Right. Let's move on to something much more negative. This week's Moji, which I'll be presenting myself. This week's Moji, speaking of Guardiola and being a bit of a tool, in the game against Liverpool, he was not happy with penalty decisions not going his way. And he was behaving like an absolute madman on the sidelines. I honestly think that if any other coach in the world talked to the fourth official like that, they would have been sent off without a shadow of a doubt. There's stuff of it going up on social media. Which is very funny, especially Liverpool fans have decided to take upon themselves to really rip Guardiola a new one with amazing captions of his antics. But if you haven't seen it, you should see it. And this is a guy who, I mean, Chelsea fans, especially Chelsea fans, will be able to kind of point to situations where they were robbed against Guardiola. And I think it's just the hypocrisy that this man sort of produces on a weekly basis is kind of annoying, and his behavior was just he attacked the fourth official, waving two fingers in his face, and he just looked really bad. So for me, this week's Moji is Mr. Guardiola himself, who was once as a player suspended for doping. Just putting that out there. Right. Right.
It got overturned, though. It did get overturned.
Did it?
It did, yeah. It did get overturned. Just to save you to save you him suing you.
Thanks, because I know he listens to this show.
But I'm totally with you, though, on him being a hypocrite. I think he's the most disingenuous person in football. And I'm not taking anything away from him as a manager, because I think he's a genius. As a coach, I think he's a brilliant coach, and he'll go down in history as one of the coaches who transformed football, along with the likes of Sacchi, along with the likes of the Total Football, Rinus Michels. And there's only been a few of those kind of coaches who have really caused a complete shift in football. And he's one of them, but he is a very disingenuous person. And nothing frustrates me more than after a game in which he's just hammered a team 6-0 or 7-0. And then he'll come out and say that was the hardest team that he's ever played against. In his career. And you see that on a regular basis. I remember he said it against Napoli. I asked the question. Yeah. I was at the match and I asked in the press conference, for his thoughts on Napoli. And he'd just beaten them. I think they only won 2-1 actually, but they'd given them a good going over, and then he was like, these are just the best team that we've ever played against. And I'm just thinking, really, you played against Mourinho's Madrid, you beaten by Mourinho's Inter, it's like, really. It's
like... No, I just want to echo everything you said, because I agree with every syllable. I mean, as a manager and tactician and his vision, it's unique. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. But as a person, he's full of it.
Nima, did you see there was actually some pictures I seen surfacing on Twitter where it was other matches in the past where the exact same handball, same situation. There was like literally three of them, and he was complaining why they were called.
Yeah.
Against his own team, and he was complaining why that was called, and this time he was complaining why it wasn't called. The exact same situation.
Yeah, and if you want to know what his biggest hypocrisy about Pep Guardiola is obviously, and I'm all for it. He's for this whole, the Catalan independence, and without wanting to go too political and stuff. But then, then he's an ambassador for Qatar, and it's just like, it's just, you can't get any more hypocritical than that. You can be all in favor of independence in Catalonia, and obviously the Catalan people over the years have been, treated pretty badly by the powers in Madrid, with General Franco, and going back years, decades and centuries, fair enough. But then you're an ambassador for Qatar,
the Qatar Foundation, and I know it's and the way they treated guest workers, especially not just the ambassador for Qatar, but for the Qatar World Cup, after revelations of the horrible conditions that guest workers were treated. I mean, it's like.
And then you just have to look at the owners in charge of Man City. I mean, just do a bit of googling on there. I mean, I'm not going to say it myself, but
you don't need to. He's special when it comes to that. Right, Fad, I'd like to thank you, Carlo, for coming on. It was good to have you for the full hour.
No, it was a great pleasure. I had a lot of fun, guys. So thanks for having me.
And I'd like to thank you, Michael. As always, it's a pleasure.
All right, I'm going to go enjoy the snowstorm right now, guys. So that's going to be the rest of my day.
Dress warm.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. And as always, my name is Nima Tawale Rutsari, wishing you a pleasant international break. We will be back next week to preview the matches as it gets serious in the Champions League before the Christmas break. So until next time, good week. Buona settimana. E sempre e solo Forza Inter.